your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
And good evening, everybody. It is Monday night at 6 p.m. Central Time, so you are listening to the Odyssey Files on Para-X. I am your host, Michael O'Neill. With me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Dave Soering. How are you tonight, Dave?
I'm doing wonderful. Really? Great. Yeah, well, you know, now, physically, I'm doing horrible. But, you know, mentally and spiritually, I'm doing great. So,
2 out of 3 isn't bad.
Yeah, 2 out of 3 isn't bad. I figured it, you know, it's okay. They wrote a song like that, I believe.
Did they? It sounds familiar.
It sounds like a line I remember, like some Captain and Tennille song or something.
2 out of 3 ain't bad. If anybody, yeah. it's obviously
no. It was Meatloaf. It was Meatloaf. Yeah.
It was Meatloaf.
Yeah, that's one of the lines of one of his songs. Anyway,
I'll be schnickered. Okay.
Yeah.
It's actually surprising, not to get completely off topic here for what we're going to be discussing this evening, but I'm surprised at how many Meatloaf songs I don't know about.
Well, I mean, you're not a big fan of the rock, you know, the classic rock era, are you? I mean, you listen to a lot of country, so.
Right, but I basically my whole thing on music is if it's good, I'll listen to it. So I like a lot of the different genres. I mean, I listen to Rammstein, I listen to Metallica. I think they're really, really good. You know, I like Bob Seger, Billy Joel. I mean, it's not just country.
Well, and look at it this way, right? You like Meatloaf. I mean, the food product. So, I mean, how the hell could he not be like one of your favorite singers, right?
Is that a fat reference? Dave?
No, I'm right here with you. I love Meatloaf too, especially when it has gravy on it and mashed potatoes on the side with extra butter and sour cream.
I don't know about gravy, but that's just me. So call me weird. Anyway, now that we've gone full circle here, getting back into the paranormal part of it. Our guest tonight is a personal friend of Dave and myself. He is a paranormal investigator and author of the book, The Spirits That Haunt Me, Mr. Nathan Leet. How are you tonight, Nate?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Well, oh, absolutely.
Welcome, Nate.
When Dave and I first, you know, were talking about the show, we were like, well, we got to have Nate on eventually. Yep. Because, I mean, we knew that, you know, you had this book out and whatnot, and obviously paranormal authors are, you know, they make really, really good guests, and we hadn't read your, you know, neither Dave or I had read your book by that time. So, but we have now. Speaking of which, so why don't you, even though it's in the book, why don't you give us just like a brief overview of how you got involved in the paranormal?
How I got involved in the paranormal was pretty much completely by accident to start with. I was the school reporter for the Iowa Western Community College newspaper, and we got the list back in 2003, and we got the list of new campus organizations, and there was a new group being started called the Iowa Western Ghost Hunters Club, and this was like season one of Ghost Hunters, the TV show, and I had no idea. I'd never heard the term before, so I'm like, okay, I'll go check it out. And so I went, they just did kind of a meeting, and then I talked with Josh Hurd, who was the founder. He's now one of my best friends. And then meetings are boring to report on. So even as like someone with 2 weeks experience on the job, I knew that. So I went and covered an investigation at a place outside Maryville, Missouri called Workman's Chapel. And I saw stuff I couldn't, had no frame of reference to explain or anything that way for in that night, and I've basically been hooked on it ever since.
Yeah, it's amazing how that goes. Yeah. It's just like that first experience is just hooks you, and you never look back.
I wouldn't say I was ever skeptical. I was always kind of open to the possibility that there was more than what we realized was out there. But this was like knowing that it's possible and then seeing firsthand someone get smacked and knocked down by something that's not there is a completely separate, like there's nothing you can prepare for that.
Especially if you're the one that's being smacked down.
Yeah, I wasn't, but I was standing next to him. So.
And I knew speaking of that, and we've heard that story, but you know what, the one thing I've never heard of that, what caused,
uh-oh.
I mean, what do you,
Dave, you froze saying? Again.
You think it was, did I see you guys just fine.
There you go.
Okay. You're back.
All right. Did you not hear my question?
No, it froze right as you tried to ask it, which is part of the course when discussing that place. So,
yeah. I was going to say, what do you know, like what caused that guy to get smacked down like that? Like, why was it picking on him? Remember, why did it come after him?
Well, it was Josh that got smacked, and it looked like
that answered the question right there.
Yeah, it looked like somebody just kind of came up and smashed him across his lower back with a baseball bat, the way his body kind of lurched forward, and then, like, his legs were completely numb. It took three of us to kind of drag him up and get him supported against the car before he could get to where he could stand under his own power again.
Wow.
But he was by far the authority figure for that group, and over the years we've come to realize that the entity that is there tends to pick what's going to cause the most fear and anxiety to everyone there, not just one particular person.
Gotcha.
It just kind of feeds off that.
Yeah.
So if you take the leader down, obviously everybody else is going to follow suit.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and Josh was last one out of the chapel. Everyone was there watching him, broad view, like, 25 people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was perfect opportunity.
That's a big crowd for an investigation.
Yeah, it really was. It was essentially because Josh had an idea of what was going to happen down there. And so that was essentially, he wanted to weed the group down to the people who were actually going to take it seriously. And, not cause, you know, mass panic amongst the rest of the group.
Well, that's one way to do it.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend experienced investigators to go to that place with what's happened down there, but let alone a bunch of people with no clue what's going on. It was a terrible decision.
Yeah. It was interesting.
Yes, it was.
About that. Yeah.
So, so Dave and I weren't there, because this chapel that this workman's chapel that Nate is talking about, Josh hosted a 2-day event there just for their friends and whatnot to come and experience this. And so Dave and I went down there, and so we actually have, you know, like the firsthand experience of what that chapel can do. But speaking of that event, and I mentioned this to you earlier, Nate, I think a couple days ago when we were talking about it, you guys had a lot more activity and action than Dave and I did.
Yeah, really. While you guys were in the chapel, there was a lot going on in the cemetery that you guys weren't really aware of at the time. And again, because there were a lot of people down there, we tried to kind of keep it kind of on the download and not cause, you know, mass panic. But
right.
There was another girl that was there. My wife and I were kind of sitting just in the back in between a couple different groups. You guys were in the chapel. We were out by the tree behind the chapel. And then there was a group in the cemetery.
Yep.
And while we were sitting there, there was that meteor shower that night. So we were just kind of sitting back, you know, watching the sky, and all of a sudden it smelled like a whiff of rotten eggs, sulfur, whatever you want to call it, just kind of like brushed right under my nose and headed towards the cemetery. And then as soon as I smelled that, like, remember that night, it was just super clear, super bright out.
Yeah.
And like, we could still see the stars, but like when we looked laterally, it was like the darkness was just kind of closing in on us. Like it got to where we were only 15 yards from the chapel at most, and we could barely see the back of the chapel. And then that kind of led up, and then there was a group in the cemetery led by Blake, of all people, who has had his own fairly traumatic experiences there.
I was surprised to see him back there.
Yeah, it took honestly a lot of cajoling on Josh on my part to get him back there.
Yeah.
And he, after what happened to him there, he doesn't investigate at all. Like, outside of when we drug him back for the movie and for that event, that's pretty much the only investigating he does. And but there was this girl named Emma out there who she got psychically attacked or tempted possession, however you want to look at it. Basically, like, she was there with another guy, a couple other people in the group, and she felt something kind of trying to take over and just felt like this rage at one other member of the group and just wanted to like kick his ass for no reason whatsoever. And then like she came back and she was extremely irritable. Just really, like, as soon as I talked to her, I could tell there was something different with her personality. Like, and it was, that event was like August in northern Missouri, so it was fairly warm out that night.
Yep.
Really humid, and she was just freezing. Like, if you touched her, it felt like you were holding ice.
Wow.
And we had to have her wrapped up in a blanket, and then that was right as we were starting to get things wrapped up anyways.
Yep.
And so we rode on the ride home. She kept feeling like she just still just get like flashes of rage and anger, and finally she said, you know, whatever's doing this, you're not coming home, you're supposed to stay there, and kind of got mad at whatever she felt was invading her and let up. And I was amazed she actually came back for the second night of that, and then nothing really happened. But it was definitely an interesting experience for sure, especially since I had had something similar happen to me 12 years earlier, and she was giving details of her experience that I'd repressed to the point I hadn't told Josh, I hadn't told my wife, like descriptions of a specific figure that I could remember that I never told anyone about. And it was all just matching perfectly with what had happened to me that I talked about in the book.
Gotcha.
Very nice. Yeah. So you mentioned Blake and his traumatic experience, and I know that I have heard, Dave and I both heard, you know, mm-hmm. this story from Josh. I know Josh wrote about it in his book.
Yeah.
You actually, reading your account of it, you actually went into a lot more detail than previously, you know, I have heard anyway. It's pretty remarkable.
He opened up about it when I asked him for the book.
Right. Why don't you just, I mean, if you want to do it briefly, not to give, you know, anything away or anything like that, why don't you just tell us kind of what it was? Because for, you know, the intensity of paranormal experiences that people can do besides like possession and that kind of thing, what happened to him is pretty much right at the top. Like, it's almost unbelievable.
This is like, what happened to Blake is like something out of The Conjuring. We've been down there a few times, and each time we went down there after that first night that got me into the paranormal, things got a little more intense. It's like you could just feel it ratcheting up till something big was going to happen. And so Blake and Mike were in the chapel by themselves, and they could feel the air was getting heavier, like one of the key signs that something's going to happen is the bats fly out of the chapel and just like beeline out the front door and windows and don't come back. And that had happened. And one of the craziest parts is Blake was holding an audio recorder while all this happened to him too. And Josh still has the audio of it.
Yeah. We heard that actually at the event.
Blake said, Hey, we should get out of here. And Mike goes, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And they take like two steps towards the door. And then Blake, for lack of a better word, something grabbed Blake by the scruff of his neck and yanked him out the window. And Blake kicked our friend Mike in the back of the head. Mike's about 6'3". And the windowsill is like probably 4.5 feet. It hits me a little above waist height. So it's not something you're just going to trip over and fall out.
Right.
And then also, James, Josh, and I were out by the cars looking at the chapel. We could see the whole thing. And when Blake came out the window, he was out the middle of the window, and he didn't just like trip. If he tripped, you just kind of fall over the windowsill and roll down the side of the building, that little hill. He made it almost to the gravel before he hit. And that's a good 6 feet out the window.
Yeah.
And
it's more like being thrown. Yeah. With force.
Yeah. And he said it felt like something he described it as it was like a car wreck. It just happened so fast to him. He couldn't really tell what was going on. All of a sudden, he's standing there, and next thing he knows, in the air, next thing you know, he's rolling around on the ground trying to get his feet under him.
Yeah.
And then when he stood up, he didn't move. He just stood there in the middle of the road until we all started screaming at him. Like we wanted to go help him, but we were all at the same time too terrified to actually move. And so then eventually, you know, we got him back in the car, and we set a new land speed record at Counts Bluffs. But that was probably the most unbelievable, insane thing that I don't even know any other investigators that have had something similar happen, let alone, I mean, we really didn't know what we were doing at the time either. We'd only been there. Well, Josh had been investigating a little longer than the rest of us, but like for me, it was only like my third or fourth investigation.
I think that was a definitive shout out from the entity that's there. That rookies are not allowed.
Definitely. It was.
And that was don't come back again. Only
send me the varsity crew.
Right.
I don't want to deal with the JC or the JVs.
Yeah. Well, I think that what's there actually likes to do the sparring, you know, I mean, because when we were there and I was going after it in the chapel, I mean, it was there. There's no doubt about it, you know, and I think it likes that. I think it kind of gets off on that.
I definitely think it feeds on the more negative emotions like fear, anxiety. And also one theory my wife's come up with that I really tend to agree with is it doesn't necessarily attack like the most obvious person in the group. Yep. It attacks the person that the other people are going to get pissed off about and to generate more anger.
So like the innocent person.
Yeah. Emma is a prime example. She's a high school teenage girl with a bunch of experienced investigators around her.
Right.
That, you know, we were ready. We wanted to do anything we could at that point to take it out.
Right.
And I think that's the emotion it feeds off the most.
Well, yeah, I mean,
and don't forget, wasn't she the psychic? I mean, wasn't she the sensitive that
she was not?
Or, the or is that that who was the young? Right. Who was that young girl that was the sensitive?
I believe that was Megan. But Megan was in her group. They were a group of young high school and college age kids that were wanting to get started, and Josh was kind of mentoring. So again, the psychic one was one of them that was going to get more angry because it attacked this other one.
Yeah. And then, you know, when you brought up the fact of the innocent and being surrounded by all these experienced investigators, I mean, you know, our team was all there. We had Josh, we had you. I mean, there was a lot of people that had a lot of experience there. You can almost do it that it attacked them because almost as a way of showing that you can't protect people.
Oh, exactly. That's exactly what Josh and I felt is because prior to doing that event, given the history of the place, Josh and I had been there probably 3 or 4 times before we announced the event just to try and make sure, okay, what is it safe? Is the thing still here? And nothing happened. We felt like it was pretty much gone at that when we were there before we announced the event. And then first night of the event, that happens to her.
It was just playing possum.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Do you, go back a little bit in the history. I don't know if you do in the book or not. Like, I know I have a copy. I just haven't been able to read it yet. unless I could read hieroglyphics, then I would understand it completely. But the history of the chapel itself, is there any documented history for that, like really documented stuff, or is it basically just word of mouth stuff that's been passed down?
Well, basically it's a lot of word of mouth. The Workman family has owned the land for generations.
Yep.
And the cemetery was started in the late 1800s. The chapel was built in the 1940s and was either 30s or 40s that was built. And it was actively used until sometime in the mid 70s. We haven't been able to nail down like an exact year on it, but people we've talked to that we've ran into, they're like, oh yeah, I remember going out there when I was a kid. Or actually it turns out, my wife's grandfather and her uncle used to go squirrel hunting out there because they lived in that area. Okay. And so from what we've been able to piece together, it was somewhere in the mid 70s that it kind of, the chapel itself fell out of use. The cemetery has had people buried as recently as the last couple of years. So it's still active.
Okay.
The one thing, a couple of the stories about the place, there's a Civil War soldier who's supposed to have died on the property. The story is he was riding home from the war, fell off his horse, and landed on his cavalry saber.
Oh. And died.
And everybody and their dog, except for us, has seen this soldier on the property. the closest we came was the last night of filming our documentary, and there I was in the cemetery by the road, and I heard horse hooves galloping down the road. And that's closest any of us have come with that one.
That's cool. That's cool.
There's experience. Also a story, the tree across the driveway from the chapel where it said someone was hung.
Yeah, the hanging tree. Yep.
The hanging tree. The owner, the older woman who owns the property now, did confirm with Josh that did actually happen.
Okay.
We haven't found records of it, but she did confirm there was a woman from the owners in her lifetime. She said someone hung themselves there.
Okay. So it was a suicide.
Yeah, it was pretty much a suicide from what she said. But yeah, those are the major stories there. There's also rumors of a priest that murdered people on the property, and that's just stories for dumb kids that go out there and get drunk and hammered and wasted all the time.
Yeah.
Tell there's no evidence for that whatsoever.
Yeah.
So speaking of dumb kids that go out there and drink and everything, how do you think this negative entity, whether it's demonic or not, how do you think it got there? I mean, it's a church. It's supposed to be, you know, hollow ground.
It is. And one of the weird things that I've come to think about, I don't know that that negative energy can really do much inside the church. We've heard, you know, footsteps, and Blake was inside the church when he was attacked, but it immediately pulled him out of the church. And then when I was attacked, when Emma was attacked, it was all outside of the chapel itself. But yeah, I think because of, yes, it was a church, but at this point, the building is in such a state of disrepair.
Yeah.
There's, you know, is where the local kids go to do drugs, get drunk, all this bad things. I think it's kind of worn down some of that consecration. That's what has allowed that energy to be there.
Well, I think the confirmation that the suicide happened, and that's not just a story. I mean, that right there,
that
could easily open up a pathway, for something to slip in there, you know, or at least to be on the property. Let's not say not in the church, but on the property. Yeah,
I definitely agree. I also, there's more than just one spirit there. There's been several encounters where we've heard, like, a little girl's voice. And I've always felt, I don't claim to be sensitive at all, but I've always kind of felt like there's more spirits there that this other one is kind of keeping down.
Nate, I don't know if I don't think I've told you this story. It just kind of popped in my head as you were talking about more than one entity being there. But according to like psychics and people that were intuitive and whatnot that Dave and I encountered after that investigation, I guess I got actually like followed home by one of the spirits that were in the cemetery.
And surprised me. Well, I had
no idea, because they were telling me like, well, you have an attachment. I'm like, no, I don't. I'm like, it's been a year and a half. I go, what are they waiting for? Like, I haven't experienced a single thing.
I honestly think a lot of it's those other spirits just wanting to get away from that place, away from that entity.
Well, what actually turned out to happen, because I formed this team, the team that I run now, I had a medium on the team, and I asked her to look into it and to figure out what was going on, because I had no idea if it was real or not. I hadn't experienced a single thing. And she actually found out by talking to this spirit that I had accidentally stepped on flowers that were in the cemetery for one of her friends, and that now the flowers would not grow anymore. And she had come with me because she wanted me to apologize for doing that, and apologize for kind of being an arrogant douche that second night, which Dave and I have talked many times about me doing so. and I will freely admit it. I was going after this entity. It was the first time and probably the last time that I have ever done that. I told my friend, I was like, well, tell her. I go, I absolutely sincerely apologize for doing that to her friend's. It was dark. I had no idea that I'd even done it. And I'm like, but I won't apologize for being arrogant just because, I don't know. That's who I am, I guess. But,
it took you a year and a half to apologize. So, I mean, obviously she figured that out on her own.
I didn't know that's what she wanted. It was probably a lot longer than a year and a half.
Probably was.
from the time I finally figured out, or was told what she wanted. But from what I understand, she's been moved on and whatnot. I haven't heard another word about it. But I thought that you might find that story interesting.
Yeah, that definitely seems pretty par for the course there. There's been several times we've been on our way home and you see a shadow in the rearview mirror that shouldn't be there, or feel somebody have two people in the back seat and feel someone else sitting in that middle, the hump seat, and like, okay, now you got to go back.
Yeah.
And they do regularly try and follow you out of there.
Yep. This is not the paranormal taxi.
It is exactly.
Time for you to go back home. Yeah.
This isn't the para Uber.
Yeah, pair of Uber. Yeah.
One final question before we go to break. Do you believe, and I know you actually talked about this in your book, but it didn't really go past it, And I don't know if you guys have been out there recently, but do you believe that it is still there?
I do. We were actually out there about probably a little over a year ago, and it definitely felt like something was still there. The local police and the family that owns it, their kids have kind of taken over and are nowhere near as receptive to this as the older woman has been. And the police have put a lot more crackdown on people being out there. The kids aren't allowed out there. We even had written permission that was apparently revoked without us knowing. And so anyone going out there at all now, they're like, no questions asked. We barely avoided trespassing charges. So they have really cracked it down. And the last time we were out there, it felt the only way I could describe it, and Josh and James and I all felt it kind of the same way, was before it always showed like a lot of cunning and like choosing his moments. Yep. And this, it felt like we were being stared down by a hungry animal. Like, just, it felt really desperate and really, like, it was almost more unnerving than it has been previous times out there.
I get the image of hunger.
Yeah.
Like, it was starving, you know what I mean? Like, it was exactly like, I haven't gotten anything to eat in a while.
Was, it felt like there was, like, a starving grizzly bear or mountain lion or something out there, just, like, the whole time we were there.
It makes sense, especially if that's what it fed off of. So
yeah, and especially with the crackdown on it, I'm fine that we can't go back there. I've had my experiences to fill a lifetime out there, and I think the increased enforcement on it and the cracking down on people doing drugs and drinking and all that out there is exactly what's needed to happen, because ultimately that's going to be the best way to make it leave, is just starve it out.
Sweet. So what is it? Feed a cold, starve a demon?
Sure. Something like that.
There you go. T-shirt idea right there.
Yeah.
Wow. So not going to make that t-shirt. Okay, so we're going to go to break now, and then we're going to be back with more Nathan Leet and talk about kind of more and different cases that he's been on to in his career. So we'll be back. You're listening to the Odyssey Files on Para X.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para X.
My name is Greg Bakken. I'm a writer, a producer, and a paranormal investigator. My favorite way of communicating with spirits is through using the spirit box, also known as a ghost box. I invite you to listen to me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central for interviews with people in the paranormal community and beyond. Plus, I will also include as much of my spirit box evidence as I can during my show.
My name is Greg. Can you say Greg? Can you say Jeff?
Greg. Jeff.
Join me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central Time for Minnesota Ghost Box, only on Para X Radio.
Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the producer and host of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. I am a published author, academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast who holds 4 advanced degrees with an interest in parapsychology and life after death issues. I have written about and encountered nearly 100 situations involving the paranormal, with my most frightening experience being a floor-length mirror cycling around in front of me in a haunted room I had stayed in. I invite you to tune in Thursday evenings at 11 o'clock p.m. to 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Saint, and you're listening to Mike and Dave, my fourth favorite paranormal radio show, guys. Duo? Guys. Whatever, it doesn't matter. They're moving up in the ladder. And I love you.
Really done it.
Okay, and we're back. You're listening to the Odyssey Files. I'm Mike. Everybody knows Dave. And with us is our guest tonight, author of The Spirits That Haunt Me and paranormal investigator Nathan Leet. We're going to move on from Workman's Chapel to another much more known and famous location that is in southwest Iowa. Obviously, we were talking about the Axe Murder House in Villisca. Nate, how many times have you actually been to Villisca?
I've done four overnights. I've done like three or four tours, and I was there for the barn that's outside the house now. I was there the day they helped start raising that, and there was, you can actually see pictures of me up there putting nails in the studs to build that second floor. So I've been down there a few times.
Wow. Nice. I did not know that about the barn.
Yeah,
I didn't either.
So
it wasn't there the first two times. There was just an outhouse.
I did not know that. I thought that barn was, well, I shouldn't say always there, but
it's a barn they moved from another property, and it was spring of 2004 that was, we were getting started on that.
Oh, sweet. Good information. I'm learning stuff all night tonight. So now this is something that I have heard, about Villisca from many, many people. In fact, I just had it again reaffirmed, the calling that I was on, this past Wednesday. And would you agree or not that Villisca changes like every time that you're there? It just seems to be
absolutely
good one time, bad another time, and then it's back to being good, and then you get absolutely nothing.
Absolutely. The first two times I was there were pretty much constant activity. And then the last two times I was there, well, the other weird thing with Villisca is it's a museum. It's not an actively lived-in house. And you know the difference when you go to a house that's actively lived in. You can just kind of feel it's got kind of that warm, active feeling to it. And Villisca, the first three times I was there, I described it as, it felt like you were going to grandma's house when you got there. Like, just warm, like you half-expected fresh-baked cookies to be sitting there. And then it progressively got less and less like that as the night went on. But the last time I was there was in 2014, I believe. And you walked in, it just felt like an empty building. And that was the first really weird thing there. I've usually felt like there's had encounters with multiple entities there as well. And the last time I was there, it was really just two, and it was just a couple. We were there from basically like 6 to 6, and there were really just two bursts of like 15 to 20 minute really intense activity.
What do you think causes that? The up and down, the good and the bad?
Well, according to the last time I was there, when we were doing the mini mag lights, getting them to respond to yes, no questions. And a lot of times you get like a lot of, I call it just like interference or randomness to it. And these sessions were very direct and precise. Like if we didn't ask anything, it wasn't turning off. If we asked it to turn on for yes, it immediately turned on. If we asked it to turn off, it immediately turned off. And there wasn't a lot of, like I said, just the randomness you usually get when you're doing that. And I asked if the first spirit I was talking to identified itself as Ina Stillinger, which I've always felt like I had a fairly strong connection with. The first time I was there, second time I was there, I got a really, really clear EVP of her saying, in the blue room, of her saying, "I'm Ina," when I asked who was in there with us. And again, this time I went through kind of the list of names trying to get the identity of who I was talking to, and it came back as Ina again. I asked if she could leave, and she said yes, and I asked if everyone else could leave, and it was kind of, when I asked if the other kids could leave, it said yes. When I asked if everyone could leave, it said no. And I get the feeling that everyone except Sarah can kind of move on. Sarah being Sarah Moore, the mother of the family that was killed there. And a lot of people report their more negative experience. They also have a very strong sense of it being a female spirit. And I think Sarah's never really been able to move on. She still thinks it's her house, and why are these people here every night?
Very interesting. I've actually heard, again, from multiple people that they think that all that's left in the house on a regular basis is Ina and Sarah.
I have a feeling. And Ina basically said she could leave but stayed with Sarah.
So do you think that she kind of saw Sarah as maybe like a second mom and just doesn't want to leave her?
I definitely get that feeling. Like, also from what I've researched is I believe Ina actually made it out and was drugged back in. I believe there were more than one person on the property the night it happened. And I kind of get the feeling that Ina is kind of a tempering influence on Sarah's spirit. Because Sarah, I know Johnny said when he's had, Johnny Hauser, who lives next door, is the main tour guide. I know when he said the more negative experiences he's had and people in his house have had, they claimed as an angry woman. Which that makes me think is Sarah.
So the guy who purportedly was in the attic space, is that entity like completely gone from that location now then?
I've never once felt like the killer was in the home. The only spirits I feel that I've interacted with are primarily Sarah and the kids.
Okay.
I don't even know that I've necessarily even really interacted with JB.
Okay.
What do you say to the people? And again, this is off and on, is you could have the people saying they either experienced nothing or they experienced the children and everything was very playful. And then they go back and it's like got this shroud of negativity and they're certain that the killer is still there. And you know that they were fearful for their lives and everything. What do you say to those people who say they've had those experiences?
Honestly, I think the house gives you what you want to experience, or what you're expecting to experience. Because Blake has been there two of the trips with me. Blake has had completely different experiences than me. But the interesting thing with Blake is, obviously, with what happened to him in Maryville, things like to mess with Blake in general. And with Velisca, the lead Pinkerton that was sent to Velisca was Detective Wilkerson, who turns out was Blake's great-great-great-grandfather who married Lena and Ina Stillinger's older sister.
Wow. Look at that for a tie-in, huh?
Yeah, the first night we were there was when Darwin was still alive, still owned it, and we met him at the museum and we're kind of going over it. And Blake goes, "I know I'm kind of connected, but I'm not sure how." And so Darwin asked him about it. And so when he goes, oh, so that makes Lena and Ina your great great aunts. And Blake just turned like white as a sheet and was not quite prepared for that to be the answer, because he thought he was connected to one of the suspects, not necessarily anything else. But then to find out that he had, you know, direct blood relation to the Stillingers was a lot for him to take in.
I bet.
So, yeah. So I was there last August, first time. And I experienced pretty much like relatively nothing for that. But the one thing that I kind of did have, and you know, and I tried to play with Ina and them, you know, I spent a lot of time in their room trying to connect with them and seeing how they were doing. You know, I tried to apologize to Sarah and, you know, to keep everybody very respectful of their house, you know, for her. And, but during the Spirit Box session, which was very, not mundane, I guess. I mean, there really wasn't anything going on. And I kind of was, got a little, I wasn't provoking or anything, but I was like, you know, there's a lot of people that have a lot of experience in this house and, you know, you're just, you're not giving us anything. And, you know, kind of what is the reason for that? Is there a reason for that? And about the clearest voice that I've ever heard come out of that Spirit Box, in, you know, if not ever in years, it just was like, careful. And I mean, it was a male voice. I mean, and I was like, ho. I mean, I got all excited. I'm like, guys, did you hear that? Holy crap. And, but you know, if it's just Ian and Sarah, then who was that male voice?
Well, I think it's just them on a regular basis. I think the others tend to kind of come and go. But like I said, I also think the spirits that you kind of want to encounter are the ones you're going to encounter. Like,
So do you almost think that maybe because of the energy and everything that has happened there and all of the people that come through that place on the tours and the investigations and whatnot, do you think that it's kind of given the house a life of its own?
I very much believe so. And because like I said, like those first few experiences there, it was the house, it felt like a very warm, inviting, lived-in home, not just, you know, a museum house or a historical building, an empty building. It felt very active, which is tough to describe, but like I said, the only way I could describe it was it felt like when you show up at grandma's house.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. You know, it's got the energy. You know, it's got the lived-in energy. You know, you can feel it when you walk in. There's a certain aura about the space, you know, that you can pick up on right away, and versus walking into an abandoned facility where that's just all it is. It's just four walls and a few fixtures and whatever, but there's nothing there at all. It's just completely barren.
Yeah, and that's, I definitely believe the house has its own character. Also, one of the things I've always found very interesting with the Velisca house is there's a theory that the killers used the trains coming through town to mask the sounds of what they were doing. And every time I've been there, every time a train goes through, you just feel the temperature drop, the activity seems to spike. Like that day we were up on the roof building the barn, it was Josh and me and people from three or four other groups, and a train came through and every one of us just shook our heads and effing trains all at the same time. Just, which, I mean, everyone's had that experience with the trains there, it seems like. So I think that definitely ties into it. I think the house itself is, because of the nature of what's happened there, and immediately after the murders, there were over 100 people that came through the home before the police were able to cordon it off.
Yeah,
and so literally from the time has happened, there's been people just in and out of that house constantly. So I do think it's kind of a portal to the other side as well, is specifically for those spirits, but I'm sure there's, you know, other kind of random travelers through there as well.
Yeah.
Interesting. Any more questions on this one, Dave?
I was just going to point out your favorite paranormal celebrity actually caught the what I consider to be a fairly good EVP while the train was going through that was on his show. So,
which one was that?
Yeah,
which confused one? Look on your face. It was Zach.
Oh, that favorite one.
Yeah.
Also,
oh, that's right. They were there, weren't they?
They were there, and when the train went through, they got the EVP that said, "You know, I killed 7 people."
Yeah.
Oh, I killed 6 kids.
Or 6 kids, yeah.
But yeah, I killed 6 kids. I remember that.
The house will get you what you're looking for, because for the whole time, the only people they were trying to communicate
was just the killer. Like
all evidence in the paranormal community to the contrary was the killer, not the victims.
Right.
So, Nate, let me ask you your opinion on this. Now, I haven't had anybody else listen to it, so maybe I'm wrong. And granted, I've done an excruciatingly horrible job of getting through the evidence from Villisca. I've listened to like 3/4 of Ina's room, and that's about it. And I blanketed that house with recorders and everything. But I do have an EVP that sounds, you know, like a little girl, probably Ina. And it sounds like she's saying, "Are you done yet, Reverend?" So do you think maybe because I know when Amy Allen was there with the Dead Files, she had, you know, she, you know, I'm not going to use this as evidence or anything, but she saw the, you know, the figure in the barn that was kind of the overseer. And then she drew the sketch of him and it matched the Reverend's photo. So do you think that maybe he's still around?
He could be, but the other weird thing with that house is I think it's kind of a weird mix of, normally you have hauntings, they're either residual or intelligent. It's not usually both. And every time I've been there, it feels like it's an intelligent haunting until the residual activity starts. And then it's like those intelligent spirits kind of get sucked back into that residual haunting. So I think you get a little bit of both there at the same time.
Interesting. There's one more case. We've got about 8 minutes left. So there's one more case that I want to get to from your book. And it blew my mind, not only by like the setup of it and how it came to be, but like what you guys did and then what happened afterwards. And that was Brenna's apartment.
Right.
So take us through that quickly and what all happened that night, because it blows my mind. I can't even comprehend how I would even like react to everything that I read, let alone like live it.
Honestly, had I not had my experiences at Workman, that would have been the most terrifying night of my life. But after Workman, that was a walk in the park. But so that night, I was hanging out with two of my friends who were, I guess you'd call them Wiccans for lack of, weren't exactly Wiccans, but for general terminology, it'll work. And we never really discussed that. They knew I did the investigation stuff. And we get a call from our friend Brenna and say, "Hey, there's something really wrong at my apartment. Can you come help me out?" And Brenna, basically, she said she felt like something followed her home from an alleyway she cut through next to a comic shop. And she was laying in bed, and she said it felt like there was something staring at her, and it felt like the walls were bleeding. So we're like, okay, let's get over there right away, because that sounds pretty messed up. And so I grab my standard K2 meters, my recorders, all that stuff, and my friends grab some of their spell equipment, I guess is what you'd call it, and we went over there. And like walking through her building, it didn't help, like it was like 1 a.m. and someone in her apartment building was blasting Slayer at like 1,000 decibels, like literally shaking the walls. So walking through an unfamiliar building, it was obviously a very old house that had been very cheaply constructed into like one bedroom apartments. And so we're navigating this maze of uneven hallways just to get to her apartment at the back of the building, with Slayer blasting at us at like wall shaking sound levels. Get there, and it just felt like all the energy got completely like sucked out of you. And there was definitely something. I would not say this thing was ever a human spirit by any means. It was very animal like, and you just felt like all the energy drained. The air felt like you were walking through a wet blanket. Just like it took a ton of effort just to move. And we kind of, my equipment picked something up on the bed, and one of my friends took out her ritual knife and basically just made a slash in the air above the bed and threw it, acted like something was like struggling with her arm, and she threw it out the window essentially. And then, so when that was done, we, you know, did a cleansing through the house and thought we were all good, walked outside, and you could just feel this thing like breathing and staring at you from a stump in the yard. And so we had two vehicles there. We split up, and my friend Brandon and I are driving away down the street, and in the rearview mirror, I see this shadow like scrabbling down the street after us. And it caught up, I was flooring it out of there, and it caught up to my car, hit the car, and just all the electricity died. Like, the car went completely dead. Luckily it was a manual, and we were going downhill, so I just kind of popped the clutch, back into neutral, got it restarted, threw it in gear, and went on. And then it chased us probably four blocks until we got to Dodge Street in Omaha, which is pretty much the busiest street you will ever be on that's not like a major highway or interstate. And well, it, no matter what time of day, is just wall-to-wall traffic. So once we got there, it let us go. But yeah, that was an intense night.
Like, Dave, have you ever encountered like a black shadow or whatever that chased your car?
Something that chased my car? No. I've had a lot of wild experiences, but I've never had something literally like run down the street chasing my car. No.
Yeah, was like, it was like a quadrupedal shadow chasing my car. And when it caught the car just died. Like, everything just shut off.
That sounds more like almost like a UFO type of shadow entity experience. I mean, you know. I mean, that massive amount of a power drain like that is something you normally, that I've heard, you know, would be associated with, like, you know, an ET or, you know, a shadow entity or something. So
it wasn't necessarily a power drain. It just basically killed the connection between the engine and everything else. Just all the it was like my battery died on me.
Well, hence the energy drain. I mean, it sucked the battery dry, you know, shut everything down on you. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. No, I've never, nope. I did read about, you know, in, I have read about that, you know, things like that, that in books that I've read and some, you know, documents and stuff like that of, you know, things chasing as people, somebody's fleeing from an area, you know, they see something behind them, but not to that extent. No, that's crazy. Yeah.
That's a wicked, wicked experience. Nate, for the people that want to read, obviously, you know, the stories that we've talked about tonight, plus the other ones you have in your book, how would they get your book?
Just search Nathan Leete, L-E-E-T-E, on Lulu.com. You can buy either a PDF version or a hard copy version there. Otherwise, it's also available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBook Store, pretty much all your major formats. You can find it online.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right. Well, I think that does it for us tonight. Nathan, obviously, thank you for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
No, absolutely. As usual, if you want to reach Dave and myself, you can catch us on Facebook, Odyssey Files Radio, or Odyssey Paranormal Society, my team. This show, along with all of our other shows, are archived on my website, odysseyparanormalsociety.com. So, yeah, I think that does it for us.
Absolutely. Thanks. Thanks for being on, Nate. Great, great experiences that you shared with us tonight. Really, and I enjoyed hearing some of those things since I haven't got to talk for a while.
Perfect. All right. Well, everybody, have yourselves a good.